Hi, welcome back to Cambridge Inside Out. I'm Judy Nathans.
And I'm Robert Winters.
And we're going to continue going over some of the
a little more at City Council.
Night. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, not that the City Council is the be-all end-all of Cambridge. It's just something, right? There was one item that was on the agenda last night, which was kind of interesting, and it's actually, I've been reading on the social media some follow-up about it today. So there was a, you know, was it a few weeks ago they passed this, what was it called?
Yeah.
The cycling safety ordinance, right?
Yeah.
You know, mandating that with every new infrastructure road project that they had to do something on the roads, right?
Yeah.
And then, but there was an exception if the manager could make a case why a different treatment was appropriate. So, okay, so right away, so one comes in on Webster. There had been a City Council order calling for putting in so-called protected bike lanes on the Cambridge section of Webster where it meets the Somerville line. You know, basically between Columbia Street and
the junkyard area.
Basically,
which has now changed because of development and the Green Line extension coming.
That's right. Yeah. So there's going to be a lot of changes happening in the relatively near future.
Yeah.
Some actually residential construction is happening right now.
Oh, absolutely.
Which is kind of half blocking some of things there.
Yeah.
So anyway, so there was an analysis and a recommendation came back from Joe Barr, head of traffic and parking.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much saying like, well, we actually disagree with the idea of putting in the protected lanes in this particular section here.
Mm-hmm.
And then he gave this very detailed response explaining why it would be preferable for cyclists who are coming from Somerville toward Cambridge
to continue
there, because basically saying Columbia Street is not really the best route safety-wise for cyclists,
and
it would be very difficult to make it so.
Right.
But it would be much better if you were ultimately heading down toward Kendall and wherever, and actually a lot of other places, if you just were to sort of dodge off on, I think it was Tremont Street,
to get over to Webster.
So there was this parade of people from the Somerville Bicycle Committee saying, this is outrageous, how dare you, why don't you do this? And I'm sitting there in the audience going like, yeah, okay, but you don't live here, buddy. Sorry. Anyway.
They bike there.
They do bike through there. But they were like making it out as though somehow this was like, what a horrible thing. How dare you not do this? So I was listening to that and I read very carefully. And I'm not always a fan of Joe Barr.
Yeah.
But I read exactly what his statement and the analysis, at least for the near term. What happens 5 years down from now? Who knows, right? But the analysis was very sound.
Something about curb cuts also, nine curb cuts, and how you can't have the difficulty of doing this.
You couldn't with these curb cuts. If you want to put in those little flexi posts here, it would be difficult.
Yeah.
You'd have to pretty much eliminate all the parking throughout, but there are active businesses who absolutely need it.
Well, what about the tow trucks? The tow trucks are just one part of it,
so they're coming and going.
Yeah.
So he basically said that if you wanted to sort of put in your protection in there, the net result might actually be less safe than it is today.
You want to show the map?
So we'll just sort of pop over here just a little bit. So we're on the right-hand side here.
Yeah.
Yeah. So basically, if you're going from the top of the picture down, you could either...
Well, this is Somerville up here.
This
is Prospect.
So if you stay on Webster and sort of straight and then bang onto Columbia, there are some compromises associated with that safety-wise.
Yeah.
So the recommendation was that cyclists should actually, and they would sign it accordingly, southbound on Tremont, and actually northbound on Elm,
Where is Elm?
It's two little locks over. You can barely see it in the picture here.
Mm-hmm.
But you would come down to close to where Oleana is, and then bang a left on Hampshire, and Hampshire is much more laid out and appropriately, and will only get better in terms of cycling safety. So I think the proposal from Joe Barr was very sound, but one after another, the people from the Somerville Bike Committee.
Were there that many? Yeah.
There were at least maybe four.
One was not from Somerville because he said he wouldn't vote for any councillor that voted against him. Wasn't that one?
Right, maybe so.
Yeah.
But the thing is that, and then I was actually looking at some social media stuff today, and people are saying this is an outrage.
Oh.
And you know, I could have predicted this when they passed this ordinance a few weeks ago. I said, obviously they had to leave in a little flexibility for the manager and city departments to use their judgment on this. But then I said, but you know, now that if you don't give them every single thing they want in exactly the way they want, they're going to come back and call you a jerk. And that's exactly what they were doing today. So, but I have to say, and I am not always in agreement with Joseph Barr, but the thing is that his analysis was sound. he actually even emphasized that, you know, as part of the whole bicycle plan, it was not only about promoting the so-called protected bike lanes, it was also promoting what they call low volume, low speed streets as arterials for cyclists. Yes. And that's exactly how it's done everywhere else as well.
I'd like to hear more about that.
There are some streets where any competent cyclist knows that those are nice streets to ride on because there's not a lot
low
of conflict.
Volume and
low volume.
People aren't speeding down.
And you might even you might have parked cars on both sides. But the thing is that it's
because of that, it's not a speed.
It's a perfectly fine way to go. And you know, but you know, I mean, as I've said many times, so much of this is about turf. You know, and they sort of want to turn everything into a turf war. So anyway, the other thing I'll say, I'll just sort of show this one last time here. Just in terms of distance, if you actually look at the distance following the one that was recommended by the city, Tremont to Hampshire versus Webster to Columbia.
It's longer.
No, is it? Is it really longer?
No, longer this way.
Yeah, but that's the thing is that it's basically a quadrilateral. And the thing is it's not particularly longer.
Oh.
It's almost the same distance.
Well, which one are you talking about? The Tremont?
Tremont through Hampshire is...
Oh, to get to this point.
Yeah,
I see what you're saying.
So it may be very tight, like a 100-foot longer or something.
Yeah.
So to me, the argument is really shouldn't have even been made, honestly.
Wasn't it 327 feet was for the...
No, that's just the length between...
That's in Cambridge?
Right.
It's not
so,
all Cambridge.
So the thing is that, in fact... you know, and what would that do? That would only bring you over to Columbia Street, which would not be the best ride to be riding on anyway. So anyway, I find these things interesting, the way which like a small group of people basically try and drive the ship, the as they used to say, the tail wagging the dog, you know. So anyway, I actually hope the city, in addition to creating whatever the so-called protected things, that they really do flesh out the idea of just making riding more pleasant on streets that are just regular streets without all the funny plastic posts, you know. That's just as important, maybe ultimately more important.
Well, on streets, you can't
have those plastic posts. There's no way to do it.
You have to get rid of parking.
Right.
On streets that have
But the real radicals would like to get rid of all parking because, after all, automobiles are evil, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, tell that to the person who's older, who needed to get to the pharmacy and whatever, you can't put everybody on a bike.
They don't have a driveway.
Yeah, that's right. And a lot of Cambridge was built like streetcar suburbs without driveways, and on-street parking is the only thing that's available.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, I wish people would just at least acknowledge as much.
Well, I don't think they're talking about every street.
No, it's not every street.
In terms of the network. They're talking about major thoroughfares, right?
Right. But the thing is that so a perfectly good network option was offered here, and they immediately said, no, you got to do what we tell you.
Wow.
So, all right. So anyway, so that was one of the items that was interesting.
And then,
another item that was kind of, I don't know if it's controversial, I guess it is controversial, was having to do with Fulkerson Street and the Eversource substation that is proposed to be built.
Right.
I think it's being, if I got this right, the Metropolitan Pipe Store warehouse was sold, and I think the Alexandria people want to build more of an extension of Kendall Square biotech type stuff there,
right.
A tall building.
Right.
That has its own controversy.
Right.
But I think it was where there was like a taxi cab company operated over the up. I could have this wrong, but the thing is there's another parcel that's, I think, adjacent to that, which is where there was some sort of flipping
of
property.
I thought it was Fulkerson on Cambridge Street. I thought it was at the other end of Fulkerson.
Not all the way down. I don't think so.
I thought it was on a corner. This thing is
they're saying it's like across from Ahern Field. So there's the field over by the Kennedy
Longfellow. Okay, I know what you mean.
Which, and that only goes up as far as Spring Street. So, you know, and anyway, the point I was going to make about it was just that, they're signing petitions saying thou shalt not do this and blah, 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 blah.
Too close to a school.
Right, too close to a school. Don't you know there are children playing in the
But it's more that it's a dangerous... thing, a substation, and that's what I don't understand.
You know, I've actually been trying to wrap my head around this. You know, people apparently don't want it, but I'm wondering to what degree is this based on just misunderstanding?
Like you said, there's substations where now?
All right, so if you go up by Fresh Pond, there's a substation when you do the sort of Terminal Road interconnect where you go under the bridge from the Fresh Pond Shopping Center.
Okay, so that's not, is that near?
There's a big substation.
Oh my gosh, yeah. But that's not near any resident. Well, right, it's near
and,
those
and then if
buildings.
You go if you go over the bridge to Union Square Somerville,
yeah.
Right from Cambridge into Somerville, look to your left. Big substation there. Hmm. It's been there for ages, okay. Right? And there are residential homes all around there too, you know, and mm-hmm. they've been there for all these years. So anyway, so there is some suggestion that there are potential health negatives for being close to this.
I haven't done any research on this, so I really don't know.
Well, I did a little bit, you know.
I mean, obviously people would
there's
be saying
no,
all this.
There's no definitive evidence that shows any correlation at all. Hmm. But, you know, in the statistical world, you can still show associations like, well, there seem to be higher rates of childhood leukemia in this here.
Yeah.
But the thing is what's the causal effect? Totally unestablished. But the one thing I found most interesting, and I think I've actually mentioned this in the past, is that one thing I said, well, how much hazard do you get from electromagnetic fields caused by and associated with substations?
Yeah.
Well, like right now, we're in a studio that has lights burning and operating here. You know, we're exposed to electromagnetic fields.
Yeah.
So there's
our
an effect.
iPhone,
there's
everything.
Cell phones right there. Okay. Now, you know, so what's actually comparable? But so the thing is, it's been suggested even being near appliances could actually have a more effect than
microwaves.
Being within a half a block of a substation, right? It dies off as the inverse square law.
Mm.
What is a safe exposure level anyway?
Mm.
But here's the more interesting thing is that, so I read, and it's pretty definitive, that if you approximate to transmission lines, now we always think of those in the country as those...
Well, on the poles, right?
The big lady, you know, the ladies,
transformers?
You know, with the big
yeah.
wires and the standoffs.
Those, yeah.
But the truth is that's you don't see any of those in Cambridge, but we have very high voltage transmission lines running all through Cambridge.
But
at least two major ones.
But underground, but also overground too.
You have they step down to high voltage lines that you see on regular poles, and yes, they have electromagnetic fields associated with those.
Right.
But the thing is that when you're putting like the I don't know million volt lines or whatever, I don't know what the total volts are, that they're running under transmission lines. There are at least two major ones that I know of that are actually sort of they actually have to pack the line in oil. And pump oil through to keep to shed the
heat.
So
are they? I mean,
and they're running under the city now. And the exposure from transmission lines that have been under the city for ages.
Yeah, but they're buried.
Doesn't matter.
Really?
Electromagnetic fields just go right through it.
Mm.
You have much greater exposure along those routes than you would at any substation. That is my understanding. So I'm a little skeptical. I'm not saying no. But I'm finding myself being very skeptical about all of the concerns about health effects
of
having
a
substation.
Yeah.
Now, on the one hand, if you were waiting to have a housing development go there and instead you got a substation,
well, see, that's, I think, the
you
real
could be bothered
issue
by that.
Is that the developers sort of promised one thing and then turned around
right.
and sold it.
Right,
for
but
a
the
lot
rhetoric that I'm
yeah.
hearing is like, oh my God, you can't do that in proximity to children. And I
right.
think, well,
we
I don't know
yeah,
about
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
I really don't know about that. And so a little bit of quantification of risk. Of course, that's a whole nother and I think very interesting thing is perceived risk versus actual risk.
Are you talking
risk.
About a buried? I mean, I lived on Putnam Avenue, and I always thought it was great because we never lost power really.
Right.
You didn't have. Was that because it was underground and
yeah,
that's bad?
Yeah, actually, over there by Putnam.
And River Street's also underground.
You know the power plant right there.
Right
at the corner of Western.
Yes. And
okay,
River.
So that a very major transmission line comes there,
you're right.
And I believe that's where they do pump the oil through there to do the cooling
of
it.
The switch house.
And there's a switch house
there.
Right. See, so you know this notion that somehow the invasion of the EMFs is upon us is a little wrong. And the other thing too is that. We do use electricity, and honestly, if people want to get rid of fossil fuels, it means more and more people are going to be on the electric grid in the future.
Solar and stuff.
Well, that's actually, we have a real incompatibility in some place between solar arrays
there's other ways.
And existing
not
grids.
Not all, there's other things too. There's, I don't know, pumps. I don't know, there's not just solar, is there?
No. But the thing is, you still have to put the power on the grid, and you have to still do the transmission, and you still need to step down via transformers to actually deliver the...
Energy is always at a cost.
Yeah, and, you know...
You have to look at the whole...
Right. So when people say, well, we need to analyze whether there's really a need for this, I'm thinking, I think the energy needs are probably going up.
Yeah, and it isn't just for this lab they want to build.
It's not just for a single lab. It's really for the whole area. And substations like that service whole areas. It's not just for a block.
Do you know the Biogen? Because, you know, Food for Free got built for themselves a dedicated kitchen for their family meals in the one of the Biogen buildings. I've been there now twice.
Yeah.
It's a whole other experience going in with the security and all that stuff. However, they have like 6 or 7 buildings down in Kendall Square. Did you know that?
Yeah.
And they all run, they have a cogeneration plant.
Yep.
They have these samples of what, how much CO2 there, and they've got the, it's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm kind of reminded about somebody who was once upon a time the head of the water department, the water board.
Yeah.
He once said about development. Mm-hmm. He said that development actually, from a point of view of watershed management, is an opportunity, because what was in some of these areas was not so great. They were like pig farms and whatever. Mm-hmm. And when development would happen, you had some control over how it got developed. So they were actually able to do improvements on the watershed whenever projects would come through. In some respects, as projects come through in Kendall Square and elsewhere, there's opportunities there to actually improve the electric grid for everybody. And I think people do need to at least appreciate the fact that these are not always invasions. These could be real opportunities for improvement.
Right.
It's one of my biggest, one of many negatives I have about the whole Envision Cambridge process. At the very beginning, I said we have to talk about electrical infrastructure and infrastructure in general.
Sewers and water.
Totally skipped. It was nothing.
It's like you just take it for granted. Yeah.
You know, and I just can't really understand that.
Yeah.
So anyway, there are a lot of people who are up in arms about that. Some of the same people are also up in arms about the courthouse, what's going to happen with the courthouse.
Right, there's a whole petition going around.
Yeah.
And
there they're sort of saying, no, we want to have it be all just affordable housing or whatever. I said, well, good
Something
luck.
About the parking spaces too, right? About not get losing.
Well, I think ultimately we'll still.
You're giving away these parking spaces to the developer.
Right, in the garage that was built for the courthouse, by the way. But I think it's a matter of leverage. So it's political.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if the courthouse project needs parking and the parking is available in the city owned garage, by trying to put a stranglehold on that, it's a way you feel maybe you could put a stranglehold on the proposed development.
But
I think
it's also
that's
has
how
something
it's
to do
played.
With the Galleria Mall, which you're developing. Isn't
well,
it
was. It was originally Leggett & McCall had proposed. Yeah. Alternatively, they could basically do long-term lease of spaces in Galleria Mall. But now the Galleria Mall is all under.
They're
having another go at the planning board tonight.
Right.
On the Galleria Mall plans, because they're completely re-envisioning that in a way that I think could be pretty good. There'll be more height. They'll put some housing into there.
Isn't that all what they're doing with all these malls that aren't profitable anymore? They're
honestly,
building housing and then retail on the bottom.
The mall, or even an urban mall like Galleria Mall, which is not like, you know,
it's
Shoppers
not that bad.
World.
Right. I like
right.
Yeah.
But the thing is
that they lost Sears. They lost.
Yeah. It's not the best model in for today.
No. Well, the Arsenal. You've been over on Arsenal Street. They're completely.
That's a great example.
450
units. The Arsenal Street and North Beacon Street.
Right.
That whole area in Watertown is complete.
Yeah,
boy, if you haven't been out there lately, go out there.
Yeah, but I don't know. Again, I think it's rentals, but I think it's going to be... I don't know if
that's kind of
to make it affordable.
That's basically where the money has been in rentals. That may not be the case long term.
Right, but
for
I
the
think
short
rentals
term,
are
it is.
More...
Well, and there's a need for it currently,
people
too.
People don't
so,
stay here forever. And,
So it's, you know... Anyway, it's interesting.
That's interesting. So that
I don't know how that's actually going to shake out with the Leggett & McCall.
Right.
One thing I certainly hope is that this doesn't just get tied up into sort of politics and then we're going to spend another 10 years looking at a vacant building.
Well, hasn't the courthouse thing been around for 10 years?
At least.
So do they... So who's...
So the state... dispose of the assets. They have basically an agreement with Leggett & McCall as the chosen developer.
So can they go ahead and do it under whatever zoning they have?
The planning board did approval of a plan for what was supposed to have happened. Then there were lawsuits. The lawsuits pretty much all failed.
All right, so then they can go ahead, right?
Well, except that now the next wave of political people are coming in trying to make
hay with it. Yeah, but do they actually have power to, in other words, they're going to sue? They're going to create a lawsuit?
I don't know that they
have that. I don't think they have grounds for that, do they?
No, they don't. But the thing is that, I mean, this has all been adjudicated, right?
Yeah. You know?
But I think it's politics. So if you're a state representative from that part of town, and you want to get a lot of attention, so you go out there and say, "Look at me! I'm the champion. Yeah. I'm gonna slay Goliath." And it's all political.
I know. So they're passing around this petition everywhere, and I didn't sign it because I don't know enough about it, and I don't feel.
By the
like
way,
I
the,
can't, I
there was
do
some
that.
Communications on the city council agenda, basically saying we support moving on that project Lord knows. Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah, so much of this is just organizing. It's a matter of who's organizing the support, who's organizing opposition, you know. You know, honestly, if you live here, you just want good things to happen and, you know, end of story. Now, there are a couple of other items. Actually, let me just say something quickly on
voting.
We get to the voting here, but the thing is, just really quickly, is that you may find it interesting to actually see the list of cannabis-related retailers that are now scheduling public meetings like every single day, one after another. Right? There it is at the bottom of right there. So we'll just sort of pop in this a little quickly
here. Yeah, just show that. Unbelievable.
Okay, so just coming up. I mean, some of this dates back to previous ones that have already been permitted or whatever. You know, you might notice up to at the top 567 Massachusetts Avenue, 580 Massachusetts Avenue, 541 Massachusetts Avenue, which is 541 is the old Blockbuster site. Burt Vining, basically his company, they want to open up their revolutionary
And that's
clinics.
Already gone before the
planning and they're actually,
hasn't it?
They're outfitting the building at 541
already,
Mass
I see
now.
That.
But he made very clear he was ultimately going to want to have a recreational marijuana outlet there. So now who comes in? Sean Hope comes in as the lawyer and says, we want to open on here at 580 Mass Ave.
Where's 580?
I think it's at the corner of Pearl Street.
It's the old co-op? Oh, it's across the street.
I think it might be the fourth, across Pearl from Target, I think. And then there's yet another one.
567. Where's
567
that?
567 Mass
Ave. That's got to be on the same side.
Yeah. Actually, I'm not 100% sure with that one. But they're all within a block.
Unbelievable. So they're not going to approve all that, right? They're too close.
Well, here's the catch is that when they passed the zoning change to permit this, there were certain restrictions about how many you could have within X number of feet of each other.
Okay.
But then there's this complication with these, like, what do you call them, social equity applicants versus regular sort of, you know, big bucks applicants. Yeah. And I think the city is already talking about going like one for one on those. So you could still end up with two like within sight of each other.
Oh, we didn't show the whole thing. Because actually most of those meetings have happened and the ones starting tomorrow are from the five. Yeah, there you go.
So meanwhile, the city council hasn't quite finished their cannabis
ordinance or whatever it is.
The business permitting part of the ordinance here.
Okay.
It's actually kind of ridiculous watching the city council somehow declare themselves to be the arbiters of how businesses are supposed to be regulated. They have like no expertise.
No.
I mean, really, like zero. And it's kind of entertaining to watch them sort of hash it out.
Isn't this referred to?
Well, they could have. There is language available right now, but they could have actually ordained that last night. But they kicked the can down the road because there are still lots of unanswered questions.
Well, especially about economic empowerment.
Yes,
about
specifically about
that. Have been left out of the, you know, it's been the big players getting the, they have the bucks.
That's really what it is. But, you know, I think my understanding is that there's really two suppliers for the whole state. So,
really?
Yeah, so basically this is, you know, and they're essentially going to have a monopoly on marijuana sales, except for the black market, which I'm sure will continue.
Wow.
Right, because as one person has, I think, correctly pointed out, this is largely the designer cannabis, the high end for the, you know,
Who's going to buy this stuff.
Listen, people, if people can drop $4,000 a month on rentals and buy BMWs, I think they can probably buy Primo Pot too.
Maybe, I don't know. Yeah. I don't think they're buying the BMWs.
Yeah.
They're not.
Maybe not so. They're buying BMW bicycles now, right?
All right.
So anyway, just to sort of wrap it up here today, we probably could talk about this for many other days here. Mm-hmm. There are some things related to voting in elections. At the council meeting, there were a couple of proposals. Not action items. They were more like, we support such and such legislation at the state level. One is for what they call no excuse absentee voting, which is a great idea. Honestly, you don't need early voting if you could just basically show up and absentee vote.
You don't have to
make a nonsense excuse. Sure. You know, you just tell the truth. Say, I just don't want to vote on election day.
Right.
So I think everybody understands that's really kind of the right thing to have happen, but it requires a state change in the state constitution, which is ridiculous, but that's the way it is.
Right.
So it may take a little time for that to happen.
We're not the only municipality asking for that, are we?
I think ultimately there'll be support for that. So the legislature will take care of that.
Okay.
But there were also support for dropping voting age to 16 to 17. It's arbitrary.
On the state level?
No, more like enabling legislation to allow any city and town to do it. I think that's wrong. To me, if you're going to do it statewide or don't do it.
I agree.
I'm okay with 18. Personally, I think they ought to just say 18 is pretty good. It's a good standard for other reasons. Right, so leave it at 18.
Yeah, me too.
But
a lot of kids are still in high school at 18, so it's not like you're, you know.
I know, but Ayanna Pressley at the national level and others, right now it's sort of one of those talking points is you talk about dropping it to 16. And I think it's ridiculous, but see, people talk about it. The other item was support for non-citizen voting in municipal elections for Cambridge. I don't think that's going to go anywhere. But I think only one Cambridge City Councilor said, I don't know about that. That was Craig Kelly.
I thought Tim Toomey, too.
Maybe Tim Toomey, too. I'm not 100% sure about that. But the thing is that you know, that's an item that has been coming up for 25 years, I can tell you about here. And I personally totally disagree with that. To me,
to the non-citizen. Yeah.
You know, citizenship means you get to choose the government. Yeah. The government then administers the programs, and then everybody's entitled to
the
programs.
And if you're legally here, assuming that you're not,
you can apply. You know, and the issue of how hard is it to become a citizen, that's another issue. But, and I'll at least hear that one out. But anyway, plenty more to talk about, including the truncation of ballots, which is probably going to have happened.
Oh, gosh.
Will probably happen.
Next week we'll have Patrick Barrett.
Patrick Barrett will be here. So see you soon on Cambridge Inside Out.
Bye.